Well, good morning, friends, and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists. We have just a minute before the meeting, and we'd like to mention, try to remind everybody to keep the microphones muted unless we're talking or asking questions or prepping to ask a question. It's helpful to everybody so there's no interference. And also, it's important to recall the ULT declaration because ULT meetings maintain anonymity. We don't offer crosstalk or side issues of personal anecdotes. Participants are asked to speak directly to the chair, and these traditions are designed to welcome all to the study of the philosophy of theosophy without distractions of social distinctions or differentiations or personal attributes. So thank you for working and with us to maintain this tradition. We'll begin with the declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists, which is simply a statement of policy. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy without professing attachments to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists, all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. To carry out the work of this lodge and to fulfill the declarations, the lodge carries on 3 meetings per week, such as on a Sunday morning from 11 to 12. The topic for today, which is the final in a series for the month of October, which has been Theosophy and the Theosophical Movement. This has been the umbrella topic for the Sunday talks. Today's final October talk is simply Fundamental Principles of Theosophy, and this will be presented as a panel talk. And then after the second speaker, between 2 speakers, after the second has spoken, then there'll be plenty of room for discussion and questions, et cetera. Now, next month, this series of Sunday talks fall under the title of, or under the theme of, Basic Theosophical Principles. And next week, you're welcome to join us. The topic for consideration is the doctrine of universal unity and causation, universal unity and causation. On Wednesdays, we also have a study group which goes from 7:30 to 8:45. We're currently studying the Ocean of Theosophy, and we're currently in chapter 2. The title for this Wednesday is Evolution of the Cosmos in chapter 2 of the Ocean of Theosophy. And then finally on Fridays also, we have a slightly less formal roundtable discussion. And that goes from 6:30 to 7:30 each Friday. You're welcome to come. And this is, we've been studying Echoes from the Orient, a short book written by Mr. William Q. Judge. And this Friday, Echoes from the Orient, it'll be section 3. There are no titles to these sections, but it'll be section 3. The lodge is entirely sustained by voluntary contributions of time, service, and money. The meetings are entirely free and open to all. All are welcome to come and participate in any way that you care to. However, there are no obligations imposed or implied. So, that being said, this topic for today, as we said, is presented by a panel by two people, and it's fundamental theosophical principles. In consideration of any topics of philosophy or religion, it is helpful for a new inquirer into theosophy to bear in mind certain suppositions that help to keep perspective. Now, the fact is, it's helpful for everybody to bear these suppositions in mind to help keep perspective, whether we're talking in a theosophical meeting, and if these suppositions seem to prove themselves to you, test them out in real life, to bear them in mind in our relationships and understanding circumstances around us. We could even call them presuppositions, which serve as a basis from which ideas and life situations can be seen more clearly, more broadly, and as universally as can be seen under the circumstances. So this is what we might call looking at a topic or looking at a life situation in the light of theosophy. If I'm a student of the philosophy and try to adhere to certain principles, certain fundamental theosophical principles, can I see a deeper truth of the situation at hand and find solutions to situations? So we'll address just a few of these presuppositions. We're sure there are other ones that may come up in the discussion. But firstly, the inquirer and the student, we must bear in mind first the unity of all in all. The unity of all in all. This can also be understood to be the infinite interconnectedness of everything with everything else. So the traditional phrase that we'll hear in theosophical meetings and read in theosophical articles and books, we will see universal brotherhood. So universal brotherhood translates into the 21st century as the infinite interconnectedness of all of life. It's not limited to anything. It's not limited to mankind, but all is one. Secondly, it's helpful to maintain at least, so this is a universal brotherhood. The second would be helpful to maintain at least tacitly for the moment in this discussion, try to remember that immortality of the human soul is reality. We all are immortal souls engaged or participating in this human experience. And it can be imperfect, but we're here for a reason. We participate in this human experience, and we might remember the words from the Bhagavad Gita that the student remembers, I myself never was not. I myself never was not. Nor shall I ever hereafter cease to be. Just as the soul in this body experiences herein infancy, youth, and old age, so in future incarnations, we will meet the same. So the issue is, what is happening in these bodies while we're here? What words, thoughts, and actions are we thinking, saying, and doing in this life, which is just one life, which is one pearl among many pearls, which are strung together on a string, which is ultimately the immortal experience of the soul. So in other words, then, what is the karmic lesson that we are here to learn? This is the question. Third, it's helpful for the inquirer and for the student to bear in mind that we're not here by the whim of a God that we cannot know. We are not here as a fortuitous matter of chance, nor of accidents, nor of coincidence, nor of miracle. But we are here under law. We are here under the law in which we participate, in which we always have participated in, and in which we will always participate forever in the future. So the basket of goods that we find ourselves with in this life is uniquely ours, self-created and created in participation with all around us, and is the opportunity for growth in this life brought to us under law, rather than the whim of an external being. This is the case if we choose to accept it as such, if we choose to view life in the light of theosophy. So, keeping in mind these ideas of universal brotherhood, immortality of the soul, karma and reincarnation, this preps us for consideration of ideas in a most broad-minded way. So why are we here? Well, the ancient teaching is that man is a being, a spiritual being, who may be raised up to perfection, to the stature of the universal oversoul itself. In fact, it's written that man is, in essence, identical with the universal oversoul. He may not know it, he may not believe it, he may not be, and in some cases, he may not even really care. If we approach our life and our understanding from the perspective of what is our true identity, and am I acting as and from that basis of the soul, this idea of inherent perfectibility will destroy some of the prisons that have been created by us and for us through superstition, ignorance, and fear of false ideas that have been taught in the West for thousands of years. So these ideas can be corrected simply by maintaining and thinking about certain theosophical fundamental principles. And this will be followed by a second speaker.
So, as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. We need to ponder that. Theosophy has very attractive, magnetic ideas that have great potency. We need to test, check, and verify these through our daily lives. Now, there are many fundamentals of theosophy. The fundamental propositions of deity, law, and evolution, but they are just a prerequisite for the understanding of the entire philosophy. Now, the sevenfold nature of man is one that is very instructive. We need to understand what where our source is, where we are now, and where we're going to. The past, present, and future are really one. We are constantly in a state of flux, and we are either gravitating toward the higher or the lower. We're never really static. We may seem that, but we're not. Now, manas is that principle where man comes from. The word man, manas, means the thinker. It is sexless. It has nothing to do with males. It is completely a sexless term. Manas is that I am I that wells up. It is what connects us when, upon arising in the morning, as we collect our thoughts. We don't wake up as somebody different than the day before. I mean, circumstances may be different, but we are the same identity. Even those with amnesia, they realize that I am I. So the higher three principles of Atma, Buddhi, and Manas are that imperishable eternal pilgrim, the triad, that uses the lower four vehicles of kamma, the astral body, the physical body, and prana, or vitality, or energy, that life force. So the mind is what we are evolving. We are fallen gods, as it were. We have fallen into manifestation. We started on a higher plane and got involved into matter. And now our duty is to raise up all matter to conscious nature and stature and dignity of godhood. All the lower kingdoms will someday arrive at man's estate, and man will evolve beyond this estate. Now, every planet every planet bears life, and when it reaches the midway point in evolution, Manas is lit up. We enter the forms that we ourselves, in fact, designed on other planes. So the animal, the mind enters the animal man, and then man is no longer an animal because he is a self-conscious thinking being that has the power of choice and also is responsible for the choices that we make. Now, the expression desire first arose in it is that all embracing love that is kamma, that is the true nature of kamma. It is the principle of love, universal love for all that lives and suffers. We talk about the soul is one, but there's three aspects of soul. There's the spiritual aspect, the human aspect, and the animal aspect. We are not animals, but we can in fact be below the animals with our intelligence if we get too involved in matter and too involved in selfishness, too involved in the senses. So Manas is the liberator. It is what will save us. We are naturally gravitating toward the higher, but man has gotten very much involved in the lower, which is still pulling us down. So, as we said, we have our eternal pilgrims on this never-ending journey. And we are not animals. We are gods in evolution. And it is up to us to reach up to the higher planes through self-induced and self-devised means. That is the only way we learn. And we learn by our mistakes, but we are endowed with conscience. And so as we purify ourselves, we can ascend as the masters have, those perfected human beings. They were once just like us. And one day we will be as they are. And we will be able to help the humanities of the future. So we'll stop there, and we will entertain questions and comments at this time. MDW, unmute, please.
Well, this whole idea of perfectibility and masters, and now we're saying that we're eternal, immortal beings. Does theosophy point out a path on how we can live to achieve this goal of slowly evolving with nature rather than against it? Is there a path that's pointed out?
So there are
devotional books such as the Bhagavad Gita, The Voice of the Silence, and Light on the Path that give us instructions. Patanjali's Yoga Aphorisms is another. There are many instructions. The path varies with the pilgrim, but we are told that compassion is no attribute, it is the law of laws. So the path is one of altruistic service, of identifying our weaknesses and working through them.
So, when it comes to this idea of the path, just the fact that someone would ask, really, am I on the path? What is the path? That's an indication right there that they're on the path. And the path, in the light of theosophical principles, really, the path is within each person, and each person needs to become the path. The way to do that is to remember, how are we thinking? What is the result of what I'm doing? What is the result of the way that I'm thinking? And we are told by older students for years that a lot of learning about theosophy also has a lot to do with unlearning what we thought was true. And the way that we do that is through reading and through studying and through testing these ideas, such as just living from the basis that not only am I the immortal soul, but we all are the immortal soul participating in this self-created stuff that we're in. Well, how does that relate to the path? It relates to the path only if we're willing to open our minds and hearts to whatever lessons may be available to us to learn. And those lessons we learn from each other by observing the example of others, but we also learning by reflecting. So once we're open-minded to the idea of inner growth and open-minded to the idea that perhaps there are some tweaks and some changes and some improvements that I can make, then right there, we're on the path. And it's a matter of pointing to the teachings and learning them and following them. It's not a matter of doing what other people say to do, because the path is within.
Yes, and we're not on this path alone. Everyone is on a path, as it were. But those that are really striving, we are to meet them where they are. We are not to talk above their heads, to isolate them with terms. We are to use compassion to reach out to them and explain in terms that they can understand this philosophy. We are trying to embody this philosophy. LP, go ahead.
We are here to learn, but we're also here to serve. It has to be balanced. If we don't use what we learn to help the life around us, we're failing our lesson. And we were very amused by the fact that it's a basket of things. That's true. And we have to take them as they get exposed to us. But if our idea is to perfect ourselves, then we're failing in our duty, because that perfection is meant to serve, So it has to be service at the same time. And as you said, it has to be responsive to the one indicating. If you give philosophy to someone who's starving, you wasted an opportunity to share soup. So it's complicated, but it's simple.
Certainly, it's complicated, but it's simple. And perhaps someone who's attracted to these ideas likely already is living a life that is one of service to others and inquiry and what do I need to do to make sense of this? So almost as though, you know, unless they just wander into it, which we wonder if there's any accident, but a new person in this life to this philosophy probably is in this place of seeking and inquiring. So when they pick up that theosophical book the first time, or when they enter into a lecture that first time, there can be certain either ideas or flashes and recognition within of, you know what, I always have believed this, but it makes so much sense as this alternative idea, which is mutually exclusive, makes so much more sense. So learning and using the philosophy, I guess our point is someone who comes into the philosophy as a sincere inquirer probably in many cases is ready to use it for others as well as for themselves. And there's a lot of work to do on ourselves. Yes, MHW.
Yes.
And one thing that's interesting is meeting people who have no idea about theosophy, yet when you talk to them about non-surface ideas, they understand these principles without any problems at all. It's amazing how many people do believe in karma and reincarnation and in compassion and just, you know, doing for others and not expecting anything in return. But I mean, they're theosophists at heart, but they could be Buddhist, they could be Catholic, they could be Jewish. So it's interesting how you don't have to be a theosophist to understand or to act in these ways.
Sure, one doesn't have to be a student of theosophy literally with books. These literally are principles of life. What theosophy does is helps to put them together in such a way that in this student's experience, took a bunch of different things that always were interesting to hear and talk about and puts them together into one philosophy of life so that, you know, we can develop, a student can develop a framework of so many of these topics and start to see the interrelation of all of these ideas and all of them. How does reincarnation and karma, studying it coldly, wait a minute, you mean that really can help me better understand the past 20 years with my family and what's been going on? It can be very enlightening. Now, we know that NK has his or her hand up or their hand up. Please, whatever the contribution is, NK.
It's more like a question that I have about service. When a person knows when to serve, because if you don't, if you pick up the first time theosophical book, what kind of knowledge you have? And then if you think, now I know everything, I'm going to go and serve to people and tell them the truth, this is how it is, isn't what all the fanatics of religions do? So I'm kind of like, when is the time to understand that you're ready to serve?
Well, we have to become good listeners in order to know how to serve. And if we're trying to preach or sell these ideas to someone, we're just imposing our will upon them and we're losing a really good opportunity to just listen. These ideas are really basic and simple ideas, but they've been covered up by a lot of dogma and misconceptions. And just the whole idea that we're poor, miserable sinners, which is still very prevalent, and that needs to be overcome.
You know, there's this saying that, not everybody's ready for theosophy. And when a person starts asking the questions and seeking it out, then they're ready. Meanwhile, that's, there's no position that a theosophist should find himself in where he finds himself grandstanding. However, sharing these ideas in a theosophical forum, obviously, is entirely appropriate. And sharing these ideas, as the declaration says, there's this sentence, the work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy, such as we're doing here, and the exemplification in practice of those principles. So simply being the example can be as much or more of a lesson to others around us than giving a lecture on karma to some people, right? So taking responsibility.
Right. And the true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, but to each and all. So that should be our primary focus, to belong to each and all, to meet everyone on the road where they are as fellow travelers, not as these great wise beings. We're told one of the worst things that you can do is to engage in spiritual pride. It's fatal. Spiritual pride is fatal to one's development, but we're not to be concerned about our development. We are to grow unconsciously like the flower grows.
MHW has a hand.
Yeah, one of the worst things we think you could do, which was a error we made early on, was if somebody is saying to you, oh, I don't know why this is happening, and say, well, that's your karma. I just don't want to hear that. You, as was just said, you need to listen, you need to, talk, but you don't need to say that sort of thing, and just kind of brush them off and forget about them. So you need to be there and listen, but the whole idea of spiritual pride doesn't.
So in life situations, situations come to us as cycles, and one has to know the cycle of a situation when it's appropriate to stand back and observe and let the person work through his or her problems, and we do so with love and compassion. And then another day will present itself in another situation that's not quite the crisis, where perhaps the person may be open to some of these ideas. MDW, your hand is up. Please unmute.
Unmute.
Well, it seems that these ideas can only point us in the right direction. If our heart is not open, we cannot do anything to aid humanity, because we could be the stupidest person in the world, but if we are kind, we seem to be able to meander our way through life, but through kindness and through compassion. So a person may not know everything, but if they develop an attitude of loving fellowship, or of loving deeds, or an expression of kindness, how we understand, how can we be kind to somebody that's really getting under my skin?
Well, it sounds like that person actually is a very, very educated heart, isn't he or she?
So,
LRP?
We have to recognize that service means treating all life around us as equal to us. It doesn't mean preaching to them. It means being real. The way we smile at a homeless person, or we just walk past and feel something negative. It's all, I am a spiritual being and so are you. Yeah. So once we recognize that, we recognize that life itself is service, and how we live it is something we have to study about ourselves. But we don't want to preach to somebody. We'll scare them off from theosophy, maybe for centuries.
So there's a comment here. Help others in a case-by-case way. To know oneself will help to know what others need. So the expression, man, know thyself. And we do need to know ourselves, our motivations. We need to be honest with ourselves. And that takes time, because in the world, often it's expedient to tell a half truth or ignore someone or even lie. And it's destructive.
As I said in the declaration, there's a sentence that the Lodge welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and what? And design to fit themselves by study and otherwise. And the student who commits to that certainly learns that committing oneself by study and otherwise is committing oneself to learn about oneself and about the world around us. So the Lodge invites those who desire to fit themselves, who learn about themselves. Why? To be able to help and teach others. It seems like the two would go hand in hand. The more we do the work of theosophy, the more we put ourselves in a position to be more understanding, wiser, more helpful in the little ways that we can do from day to day.
We think SL had, yes, SL. Go ahead.
Yes, to go back to the idea of to know oneself and to know what others need. Perhaps when we study ourselves and what we need and how these fundamental principles help us, do we not have a need to feel like we are connected, we're not alone? Do we not have a need for hope and a sense of responsibility and dignity? Do we not need to have a sense of purpose, that we have a mission, a reason to be here, to get up in the morning, to live our lives? These are all fundamental needs. And for theosophists, we find these answered and much more in the fundamental principles. But any human being has the same need. And perhaps we can serve them by helping them answer those questions for themselves by our questions and support and all those things.
LRP?
We think that's the major principle where theosophy is different, because the assumption, the basic principle of theosophy is that the soul is capable of understanding these ideas and being free from prejudice and religious narrowness, that just by being a human being, we stand in a position to grasp theosophy, and it's up to us to make the effort. That principle is found nowhere else in any other teaching.
Thank you. Yes. So the presumption, it said, just to recap, that the presumption of the wisdom religion is that each human being is able to take these ideas according to his understanding, according to his conditions, according to his first situation, and use these ideas to grow from and to use them to serve others from. It's not a matter of an authority telling someone how best to live their lives, but a sharing of ideas and literally, therefore, a picking up of the baton in this life from where we left it off in a previous life when we find ourselves ready for it. Now, there was another hand or two. Was it JCS?
We have to be very cautious about how we frame the uniqueness of theosophy, because truth is truth. It's universal, it's eternal, it's ongoing. So while, yes, we've encountered eternal verities in the format of theosophy and the theosophical movement, it is truth. And therefore, it is the underpinning for all religions, all philosophies, all degrees of spiritual sciences, no matter how the expression seems to be limited or twisted, there's still that oneness and that that all-inclusiveness in this philosophy. But it's not a monopoly of just one institution. Right. Rather, it's an eternal reality behind everything.
Thank you. But behind that contribution is the statement from HPB that we are not here to get everybody to start calling themselves theosophists. We don't measure the success of the theosophical movement by the number of people who call themselves theosophists. The theosophical movement has an impact. Really, it's a matter of, have the ideas been disseminated? And inevitably, where these ideas move to, inevitably, they meet up in communities and countries where those ideas already are. And it's very validating. So what matters is the purity of the heart of the individual, the sincerity of the willingness to be of service, to be of assistance, and the willingness to continue to pass on these ideas as these ideas have been passed on to us. SL.
We have heard the expression, the soul knows what it needs. Is it possible that when we encounter an individual who is strongly materialistic or strongly devoted to an organized religion, that they feel that's where they need to be at that time? They need to be there at that time?
Perhaps they do. Perhaps they're materialistic because they're providing for their family and they're doing what they know best. And perhaps they've alleviated a lot of suffering from other people. Perhaps they're materialistic because they're philanthropists, whether they donate under their name or anonymously. We think anonymously is better, but when we see someone engaged in materialistic activity and that is their focus, or religious activity, even if dogmatic, if they are truly sincere and believe that they're right, well, they need to travel that road until they see otherwise, until they see through it. That's their journey. We've all been on these journeys before, we think. In the past lives, we've been over 18 million years in this period of evolution that we've been incarnating. We've been through all experience, but going through an experience means little unless we distill from it knowledge. It's not what we go through, it's what we get out of, what we can divine from the experience, as it were.
The question is it possible that a materialist is where he needs to be? Well, a person who, so to speak, is satisfied with feeling that, you know, who are we to judge or interfere and proclaim that he shouldn't be there? We don't know. However, for the student for the thoughtful student who may have tendencies along those lines, isn't there that statement, you know, we ceaselessly have to question ourselves, or we should always question ourselves because we ceaselessly deceive ourselves. So we may think that we are where we need to be. And for the student, perhaps if you start feeling that way a little too comfortably, maybe it's time to question and do a little more study, a little more search. As for that other individual who's the authority? He has his own inner authority. Yes, LRP, please.
We recall Mr. Judge's remarks about not judging people, and he uses as an example the most materialistic person you have ever dealt with. And he says, this is the last incarnation of something that has to be fulfilled because of seeds planted before higher initiation. So we cannot judge even when we see one in a condition that is what we would think is anti-spiritual. They're on their own path and we should not judge.
MHW, and then I think we have another contribution from the chat. Yes, MHW.
Well, situations come to us based on our karma. And as mind beings, we have choices that we can make. So depending upon those situations and wherever we are at the time in our evolution, we will make the choices that we seem fit. And whether it means to continue along the path of materialism or not, that's the choice that we make. Karmically, we will have to pay for those choices in the future, but that's where we are now. And if the situation comes to us, we make the choice that we seem fit with what we have at hand.
Thank you. So here's the chat. So nobody can change anyone else's chosen path. Everyone can, however, change oneself to become the better able to walk the path of truth and then guide others if they allow themselves to be guided. Any thoughts? Anyone can guide others if the others allow themselves to be guided. Well, certainly Mr. Crosby tells us that a student of theosophy, however experienced, you know, is in a position, you know, may not think that they're in a position to be of service in terms of disseminating these ideas. However, they may well be in a position just to clarify false ideas that other people may be talking about. So wherever we find ourselves in this link, chain of learning and teaching, all of us are learners.
So to be open, we are told to be open to the dictates of the soul. So that's how we are guided by the soul. But how do we come in touch with that? Through meditation and through action, acting as we see best. We always try to act from the higher.
MDW?
Well, I think our karma sort of gives us the direction in which we're going to go, and that the universe is always giving us opportunities to correct that karma, because that's why we're here. We have been stumbling through life, and now we're given the opportunity with correct ideas to ameliorate some of the suffering in the world that we have helped create.
So the key point there was that there will always be the opportunity to learn what we need to learn. Isn't that what karma is all about? And the opportunity will return and return and return until we have and move on to new, better, other lessons that we're ready for. SL.
We have read about the idea of certain innate ideas being impacted in the human mind at a very early period of our evolution. And so we carry these with us. Are they the same as these fundamental principles we've heard about? Do we have to learn these fundamental principles, or do we already carry them innately?
Well, we think both. They're innate principles. They've been impacted in our nature, but we've covered them up through selfishness, materialism, acting in an expedient manner when it's just acting for expediency when we should be taking the time to understand and to help and to listen and to care and to wipe a tear from the sufferer's eye. They're there, and we're trying to uncover it. It's almost like we're archaeologists in a sense. They're these ideas of nature, but we need to uncover them and to resurrect them, as it were, to re-erect, maybe is a better term. The foundation.
So when we others, really all we're doing is helping them see the truth in themselves. If these ideas are true, or let's restate that, all ideas that are true are already a part of our inner nature. The question is, have we experienced in this life yet that in the outer world, the conditions in the outer world that can evoke some of these inner ideas or in the inner nature of the human being? So the point being that careful that we realize all we're doing is helping others do and learn about themselves things that are already within them. Everybody has within them all the wisdom, the knowledge, the experience of past incarnations, but the conditions in which we find ourselves differ. And if we find ourselves in a condition where we can either alleviate some of the stress of the day for someone else, or share ideas to waive some of the ignorance, the superstition, that and the fear that comes along with being ignorant, then all we're doing is helping them see the truth in themselves. We're not telling them what to believe or what to think. And they can accept these ideas or not as they see fit. Okay, two, MDW and then JCS, please.
Well, isn't it really the simple process of changing the ideas that we hold to be true? As when we can do that, it's from within outward that life evolves. So I think that everyone who has come to study theosophy understand that sometimes it's a very slow process, but if we keep on trying and keep on trying and never stop trying, that eventually things do change in a way that is perhaps more positive than what we were living before we came to theosophy.
Thank you.
JCS?
And if we use the old colloquial expression that actions speak louder than words, and theosophically speaking, we know that true action is at the plane of thought. It's on that inner, eternal, generative plane. So as we focus, maybe in the morning, maybe in the evening, as much as we can during the day and refocus mind and ideas, those actions are so powerful. They're magnetic, they're electrical. And that impress is not only for all the lower lives in our bodies and environment, but it will attract and be a curative to all soul seeking. We don't have to worry about preaching and proselytizing if we become the path and generate that path for others.
Thank you. Yes, LP, and then we have another chat. Yes, LP.
No. That answers the earlier point that TK brought up about hearing it and seeing it from others. We all have people from our past that we, maybe we just met them through theosophy, but we have, I don't know, guardians in a sense of we can ask ourselves how they behaved and why. And so we have educators all around us at all times.
Thank you.
Chat.
Yep, we have a chat here. Is self-examination necessary for making things right, considering karma would do it anyway? Or can it just be an effort to prove oneself wrong? What do you think?
Well, we need to prove ourselves wrong before we can write it, don't we?
Right.
Need to, in a sense. We have to recognize error before it can be corrected.
Isn't it true that, all right, so through self-examination, if we find something that needs correction, let's say we lived the life of never examining ourselves, which we think Socrates says is a life that's not worth living. But if we do, will karma bring it around to us anyway, that lesson? Yes, it will eventually, perhaps 15 lives from now. However, the human being can reflect on experiences and learn from the reflection, even if we don't recognize where we are in the moment and do the right thing. Tomorrow, we can look back and see what was going on and respond accordingly and demonstrate to ourselves, our friend, the universe, that yes, we are in a position to recognize that something has to be fixed and we're willing to do so. Now, the person who's too involved in his own personal stuff not to sit back and admit to himself that he has a, yeah, that lesson, no, you don't have to reflect if you don't want to, and it will come around, and it may be a long, long time before it does finally come around.
The lesson will repeat until the lesson is learned, and then the necessity ceases for that, and then there's other lessons. There's always other lessons. Life is all about learning. It's forever learning. We're forever evolving.
There's another chat here.
If one is walking the path, that student becomes an example for others because others will begin to wonder if they themselves are walking the true path. Truth shines and triggers in everyone the need to follow the light. Well, we certainly hope so, that truth will shine and trigger that impulse to live life and learn. LP?
It puts us in mind of Browning's poem, a man's reach should exceed his grasp, else what's a heaven for? So that's natural to the soul to be striving for something greater.
Yes, it is a natural thing. Absolutely. We have a minute left. If there's any further contributions at this point, So that Kama principle, that's that desire principle that first arose in it, it's the first conscious, all-embracing desire for universal good and love for all that lives and feels and needs help and kindness. It's the first feeling of infinite, tender compassion and mercy that arose as it came into life and being. So it comes from the absolute. So that kama, that desire that first arose in it, that is that highest desire for the good of all. And it can be perverted into lower desires, but kama as a principle is that striving for the greater good of all. So we thank you all for coming and participating and listening. And we'll see you again soon, we hope. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.